What was that?
Oh, well, we've changed it up here on It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. Once again, we are excited to announce that we have partnered with Fansided, who does great work with sports podcasts, and they got with us and the pre-roll ad that you heard before this show, that's an example of Fansided hooking us up.
I know that the listeners enjoy having an ad-free experience, but they should also enjoy us being compensated, for our efforts. And so it's exciting for us, get a little money off this podcast, something a little on the hush hush from Uncle Sam. You got tax season coming up here. That's not going on my tax return next year. I'm just going to be frank about that. It's great. It's a good situation for us, and hopefully will not affect our listener experience too much in a negative way. Welcome in to It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. I'm Austin. Find me on Twitter /X at Real Bird Lawyer, on Blue Sky at Bird Law Expert. Here with me, as always, my co-host Taylor at Taylor underscore Wit on Twitter /X, on Blue Sky at Taylor M. Wit. What's going on?
Not a ton. We have been a little wacky with our schedule these last, two or
Sure.
three episodes. We've kind of done some midweek shows, kind of pushed some stuff. It's been a little abnormal for us. We're going to try and get back on the more predictable schedule. But I'm excited. I'm excited about this Fansided news that we, as you said, not only the compensation, but they do stuff. They help us pay for our hosting fees. They can hook us up with just some different audiences and things. And it's a good partnership. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We're going to continue to bring you guys the same quality programming we have always brought you, but we're under the Fansided banner now. We're hoping that that will help us also grow the reach of the podcast, and you can help us do that. We like never ask, but if you guys want to 5-star review us and retweet it, when Taylor puts out the tweet and everything like that, that's always really helpful to us. We'd love more people to listen to the show because we feel like we have a good quality product, and we're going to bring you another good quality product this Sunday afternoon. We did have a good reason. It was my birthday on Thursday, so we didn't want to podcast on my birthday. The week before that, I was in Kansas City. We didn't want to podcast while I was in Kansas City. So we will get back to a regular schedule this week. But first, we have a bang up show on a Sunday afternoon, which we push because of the Women's National Championship. RIP Caitlin Clark, RIP Hawkeyes.
Yeah.
Congratulations to
Yeah,
South Carolina.
they gave him a good run, but South Carolina's a they're a wagon. They went undefeated this year.
Juggernaut. So we're going to have news, 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 and we're going to have the next great American dynasty. And that doesn't sound like much, but it is a ton of stuff. So let's hit it. Let's start off with this stadium vote situation. So for those of you living under a rock or out of market and maybe just not tuning in, on Tuesday, the citizens of Jackson County, Missouri, where the Chiefs are current tenants at Arrowhead Stadium, voted on a proposed extension of a sales tax that has been in effect for decades now. And the extension would have gone to renovate Arrowhead as well as fund downtown baseball stadium for the Kansas City Royals. That tax extension proposal overwhelmingly failed at the ballot box. And here we are. It's been an interesting week, especially as somebody living out of market. I can only imagine what an uproar there's been in the Kansas City area for you, Taylor, and our in-market fans. But what do you feel like this means?
Well, I've kind of gone back and forth on the whole situation. I'm not a Jackson County voter, so I didn't have to actually make a official decision on it. But when it first came up, when the news first came up that the vote was coming, I had assumed that it was kind of a formality that everyone was just going to go ahead and vote yes and keep doing what they had been doing. I really didn't foresee the drama until about a week before the vote. And then I started hearing rumblings, like people would to ask me like, "Hey, do you think this vote's going to pass?" And I'd be like, "Well, I think so. I don't see why it wouldn't." And then everyone was kind of like, "Well, they haven't really done a good job of explaining anything,
Right.
and they haven't
They haven't
really,
done anything.
the plans were poor." And so then I started kind of looking into it because, I mean, admittedly, because I didn't have to vote on it, I just knew the vote was coming up. And then I kind of like looked at the Chiefs plan and the Royals plan. And was like, yeah, this is kind of crappy. This is not exactly, and not just the like business displacement aspect of it, which I, you know, there are pros and cons to the plan to put the stadium where they wanted
Sure,
it to.
of course.
But really, it was the general vibe of like, just trust us, bro. That's kind of what I got from the teams. Just like,
Right.
just keep doing it, buddy. Just keep giving us the money. We'll figure it out. And like, people weren't into that. So as the vote started coming in, and it started coming in resoundingly no. This was not
Right.
a, you know, 52-48 split or anything. I mean, this was 60-40, no. And you know, that's a problem with the policy. That's a problem with the messaging from the teams. And so they've got to go back to the drawing board. They've got to come up with something that makes more sense for all involved. And I'm hopeful that they'll do that.
Yeah, it obviously doesn't mean that the Chiefs are going to be moving out next year. They obviously have a lease that still runs for, what is it, another
2030,
4 or 5. Yeah,
2030, six
exactly.
years.
Yeah, still another 6 years with the county. Still plenty of time to get something worked out. They could obviously always, potentially break that lease. There's been a lot of talk about them moving across the state line to the Kansas side, where, Kansas having legalized sports gambling with the goal of using some of that gambling revenue to attract professional sports teams that they would obviously be. I mean, can't imagine the Chiefs leaving the greater Kansas City area. That
I
seems
agree.
completely out of the realm of possibility at this point. But I do think that, I mean, it just is funny. Like, you looked at the Chiefs proposal in particular, and it's like, what does this money do?
Yeah.
Like, what is the, and when we saw it initially, we were both excited about it because the number one thing in the proposal was improved parking situation.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
that's our primary
Big
Arrowhead
stickler.
experience,
Yeah.
not even as tailgaters, but just as people who go to the game to watch the game and then want to get to and leave the game in a timely manner. And that is an experience that, listen, I've had people tell me on Twitter that Arrowhead, relatively speaking, is very accessible. I don't doubt that that's true relative to, other cities with downtown
I
stadiums
do.
that don't have public transportation. But driving at Arrowhead is a
Brutal.
long time disfavorite of ours. So
I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemies. I mean, it is a, I actually feel, or I felt for a while, that the Chiefs kept it like that so that away fans would stop coming, that they would like show up one game and be like, we can't even get in till halftime. What is
Sure,
this? And then we're never coming back here. And so then the fan, I mean, because I can't imagine the Chiefs being okay with the current parking situation, but you're right. So when they announced the deal, we were kind of like, okay, improved parking. Okay, they're going to complete the top walkway to be 360 degrees around the stadium. So
yeah,
when you get to
it would have
one
been
end,
nice.
you don't have to walk all the way, you know, 270 degrees around the stadium in order to get to the other side. Like, you know, there were some minor improvements that I was excited about, but then the money attached to it just really didn't make a lot of sense. There was a ton of also like four or five VIP specific improvements, like
Right.
VIP, you know,
There was
entranceway
a
and
VIP, special VIP entry and
access.
access,
Yeah.
right, to the
I wonder
parking
if that
lot.
had something to do with Taylor Swift,
Yeah, maybe, possibly.
where they were like, don't worry, Swifties, we got you covered. We're going to keep your
Yeah.
girl safe and we're going to give a VIP. I mean, I don't know. But
It
point
definitely
is,
was a bad look to be like, give us $800 million and we will
yeah,
improve the experience
for the rich
for like
people.
100 people.
Give a rich person money so they can make it better for rich people. That's
Right.
basically what
Yeah,
the proposal was. And
that messaging was not popular. Can't imagine why. So we
no.
will see, obviously, how that plays out going forward. But in the short term, not going to affect anything there. Let's turn to Rashee Rice, an unpleasant situation that I don't want to say it continues to get more unpleasant. I wouldn't characterize it that way. But we continue to get more information, and it continues to be, if nothing else, sort of a black eye, a black mark for the Chiefs in the press, which isn't fun. As you guys have heard listening to these shows the last couple of weeks, obviously we're going to get into draft stuff probably starting this week, previewing things and stuff like that. But this is sort of a downtime in the NFL calendar. It's one of the very few quiet spots. We're past free agency. We're still pre-peak draft hype. We're
Yeah.
still almost a month out from that. And this story has sort of monopolized NFL headlines in a lot of ways, which is unfortunate. But Rashee Rice did release an update through his attorney since the last time we recorded. He through his lawyer, he obviously did not make a statement directly. He did release an Instagram that basically said, "I'm sorry, I take responsibility," but essentially admitted to police and then admitted publicly that he was driving one of the cars. He is cooperating fully with police. This is sort of an interesting strategy for his lawyer. Obviously, if he said all this to police when he went in and talked to them, that's that's noteworthy in itself. But to make all that public is sort of an interesting move by his lawyer. He had legal representation when he went in to talk to the police. So, one of your rights under the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution is that you have the right against self-incrimination. You can't be compelled to say, "Yeah, I was there. I did this. I'm guilty." Which is why when a cop arrests you, they tell you you have the right to remain silent, and you also have the right to an attorney. So he exercised his right to an attorney, and then he went ahead and made a voluntary statement to law enforcement. There's a lot of different reasons why it could have played out that way. Obviously, they could have seen the writing on the wall. There's obviously video of him leaving the scene, right? You can't see him in the driver's seat driving the car on that dash cam video that everybody's seen at this point, but you could see him get out of the other side of the car second, which would be consistent. I mean, not determinative, but consistent with somebody that was driving and then moved over and got out on the other side. So, it could have been that. It could also have been just a sort of a move on his attorney's part to sort of open a negotiation window. I would say, speaking from personal experience, I think it's human nature, unless you really are a bad person and a dick, that when someone comes to you and takes responsibility for doing something wrong and is contrite and basically is like, "What can we do to make the situation right and work this out?" Most normal people, when approached in that situation, are going to say, "Yeah, sure, great." Now, obviously, the situation could have been much worse, and that strategy is less likely to work if you killed somebody, if you really seriously hurt somebody, you put somebody in the hospital, you murdered, a busload of school children. That
I'm
strategy is less
sorry,
likely.
guys.
Yeah, that strategy is less likely to work. But in this situation, that certainly seems to be their approach to negotiations, which is to admit responsibility, sort of public, go public with that apology. Which is an interesting move this early in the case, but sort of is consistent with, going to the DA whenever charges ultimately are filed and saying, "Look, this is what we've done to change the situation. Like, I've been taking like a driver's improvement class. I've donated this money to the victims, or I've made these steps to go ahead and settle any potential civil claims, paying for the hospital bills, whatever it might be, doing community service, whatever it might be." That's kind of all wrapped into that package with this approach. This has been sort of an interesting couple of days because we got some minor hysteria on Wednesday or Thursday that I saw it through JP Football or one of those aggregator accounts that I know is garbage, but like when you see it and that's the first place you see it, I actually think I heard after the fact that this originated with Dov Kleiman. And I would not have seen that because he blocked me on Twitter and he did that for
Same.
me revealing his secret identity, Billy Spikes, and the whole Jennifer Lawrence stalking situation, all that. But there was an uproar over the fact that marijuana was found in his car. I don't want to say he was found with marijuana. There was marijuana recovered from his vehicle that he was in at some point before the marijuana was found, but not at the point that the marijuana was discovered. And somebody, maybe Dov, who lives in Israel, I believe, is the reporting on that, and probably uses the metric system, confused grams and ounces.
Yeah, big
And
confusion there.
there is a big difference between 10 grams of marijuana and 10 ounces of marijuana, which is about 280 grams of marijuana. 280 grams of marijuana is a lot of marijuana, and in most states will still be a felony, and in many states will be like considered a distribution amount of marijuana or possession with intent to distribute amount of marijuana, just a large amount of marijuana. Whereas 10 grams of marijuana is, I can't imagine, still a felony in any state in America and in
No,
many
if it's not in
jurisdictions.
Kansas, it can't be anywhere else
Right,
because
exactly.
Kansas has the most strict.
And not even not even ticketable in many places. I mean, in many places, legal, and
Yeah,
in
many places you
every,
can hand a cop 10 grams of marijuana and smoke it with them. I mean,
right,
it's, yeah.
exactly. Yeah, exactly right. So that uproar sort of proved to be a little bit of fake news. I mean, it was fake news. The reporting simply was wrong about that. I will say, just to add to this point, I did tweet about it the other day because I sent out a tweet, Taylor, into the universe where I said, "Good luck proving it was his." And I immediately had, not immediately, it took 30 or 40 minutes, but I had probably close to 30 accounts tell me that when something's recovered from your car, you possessed it. Like, you're good luck, you're going to be charged with it. I think a lot of this is incidental. Like, their friend was driving and there was marijuana in the back seat, and they're like, my buddy caught a charge for this. All right, that's fine. So very quickly, yes, you can be charged with something in your car, because typically, the cops and the prosecutor would say, well, it's your car, of course you knew it was in there. But ultimately, to convict somebody of possessing drugs, you do have to be able to prove to a jury that they had knowing possession of it, that they knew it was in there. So, the defense, I don't know whose drugs those were. I don't know where those came from. Sometimes that doesn't work, right? Like, sometimes it doesn't work, but it's still something that the prosecution has to prove. So if you have a car with drugs in sort of like, I don't know, a spot that's not right in front of somebody that was in the car, like, let's say you've got drugs like under the passenger seat, right? And you've got a front seat driver and a back seat passenger. How am I going to prove whose drugs those are? I mean, like, how am I going to prove who they're not in plain view? So, like, how am I going to prove the driver knew they were there? How am I going to prove that the driver had possession of those drugs or the back seat passenger, unless somebody confesses to it? And those problems are compounded in a situation like this where nobody's in the car when the drugs are found. So we don't know where this 10 grams of marijuana was found in the vehicle. That can make a difference. If it's in the driver's side, little container, the little cup holder or whatever on the driver's side, yeah, the little side pocket in the door. Okay, yeah, sure. I mean, that's a stronger argument to make to the jury. Like, of course he knew it was in there. He was driving the car, right? And it's like right there where you would
Is
put your drink
the
or whatever.
trunk more likely to be the driver because they're the ones who have access to a trunk that's like sealed off, that's not like a, I mean, I'm just thinking out loud.
Well,
Like
sure.
if someone
Well,
finds something in the trunk, that's not reasonable to think that that would have been another passenger in the car
yeah, well,
because
maybe. I think you definitely, as a prosecutor, like, you would be more likely to assume that something in the trunk of the car is belongs to whoever controls the car, the driver of the car. However, this was also a rental car. So, as a defense attorney, that is a field day. That's a
Could be
gift. Like,
anybody's.
it could literally be anyone's marijuana. It was a rental car. My client didn't check the trunk. Like, if the trunk is empty, say for a dime bag of weed, like, all right, if your stuff is in the trunk with the dime bag of weed, all right, that's a harder argument to make, sure. But if there's a dime bag of weed anywhere in the car, and it's a rental car, and somebody else rented it earlier that day, if you've been driving it for a week, harder argument to make. There's a lot of variables there. All that to say that, could he be charged with possessing the marijuana? Possibly. Could he be convicted of it? Maybe. It kind of really depends a lot on where the marijuana was and whether anybody fessed up to owning it. I don't think this changes the calculus at all, for what we're looking at, either liability-wise, criminally, or disciplinary-wise, as far as the NFL is concerned, because they're not going to be able to prove that he was impaired on marijuana. It does stay in your system for a long time, but, like, listen, even if they were able to compel him to take like a hair follicle test, which I also had somebody on Twitter tell me that they would do, that they would like get a warrant for a hair follicle test, which certainly will not do that because literally nobody has the time for that. But all
Anybody
that
got
would
time?
show is that he consumed marijuana at some point in the last 30 days, which nobody cares about. The NFL doesn't care about it. The state of Texas and the county of Dallas
That's
do
not.
not really care about it. And it doesn't prove that he was under the influence of marijuana at the time of the crash. Now, if it did, if there was a test that said he was high on this date at this time, well, sure, that would be a total game changer, because then he could get charged with DUI and his potential liability there could skyrocket. But they can't do that. So I don't think this changes the game really at all. We are not looking at charges yet, just potential charges still. It looks like at this point, based on the information that's come out, that the highest level of charge would be a third degree felony for racing, causing bodily injury. Even it doesn't have to be serious bodily injury for racing if it causes any injury at all. And certainly, one person was hospitalized with minor injuries. They could probably meet that, but they'd have to be able to prove that he was racing. I kind of think that at this point that, I would expect the charges and the resolution of this case to follow each other within a week or even maybe the same day. Like, I think because he's retained counsel, who is a state congressman, very prominent attorney in the Dallas area, because his attorney has already come out, given a press conference, admitted responsibility essentially through his lawyer. I really think that this is a case that is, it obviously is headed directly for some kind of plea agreement. And I think that it will probably be resolved before they even charge the case, unless something breaks down in the negotiations. I think probably the DA will be working in good faith with the attorney, and they'll have something sort of figured out before this ever even enters the criminal justice system. And they'll probably make arrangements for Rashid to be able to surrender himself and enter a guilty plea. And I say surrender himself. What I mean by that is, he's going to have to be booked. I don't mean that he's going to spend any significant time in jail, because at this point, that would surprise me. I really don't think that we're looking at any kind of significant incarcerative sentence at this point. You never know, but I will say, people have told me, they're like, oh, it's Texas, like he's screwed, it's Texas. As somebody that went to law school in Texas and has a lot of friends practicing law in Texas, there's a huge difference between Dallas and Dallas County and, rural Texas, right? Like in the quality of the law enforcement, in the consistency of the judicial system.
Temperament and all
And
that stuff.
yeah, I mean, if you get arrested in a big city, it goes for Jackson County, it goes for New York City, Dallas, wherever. You are going to get more lenient treatment if you are committing a crime than you are in a rural area in America. That's just how it goes. So I still think at this point, obviously it's stupid, it's frustrating, and it really sucks that we continue to have even what I would consider to be a relative nothing burger with the marijuana coming out. It still sucks that this is still in the news cycle, and it's continuing to be sort of an embarrassment for the organization. That's really where I'm at with it. It was stupid, and I wish he hadn't done it. I'm glad that nobody was hurt, and I think this will ultimately probably resolve itself with a 4-game suspension. But here we are.
I think that, a couple things inform our emotions about this. Number one, recent Chiefs legal issues in general, whether that's Tyreek, Kareem, Willie Gay, I mean Frank Clark, the list is there have been some guys. And
Expensive guys.
I mean that's the case across the league, but our lens of focus is on the Chiefs. And so anytime anything else comes up, you just kind of get this like, God, what next? That was dumb. Can't believe it. All that stuff. And then, the fact that this particular Chiefs team is back-to-back Super Bowl champions, everyone is gunning for this team in every way they can, whether that's, on social media or other, just prosecution and everything. Everybody thinks of the Chiefs as like the big, the big team. And so that lens of focus is also annoying because all you want to do is take care of business and go win some Super Bowls. That's all everybody on this team wants to do. And every little distraction like this, it gives other fans ammo. It gives other, just it's just a annoyance. And I hope it moves on quickly. I hope as soon as whatever the, a 4-game suspension for Rashee Rice, if that's what happens, certainly could cost the Chiefs a game or two in that first 4 games of the season, because as we know, wide receiver's a bit of a mess. And he was a guy that should have stepped in right away next year at week one and taken
Been the
the
guy.
lion's share of the targets and been the guy. And so depending on how the schedule shakes out on who those games are, depending on how the final scores go and everything, I mean, we could look back at this and be like, damn, that cost us playoff seeding, it cost us whatever. But right now, we don't know any of that. All we know is that he is a kid and he made a mistake, and the mistake wasn't a lifelong, punishment. It wasn't something that cost anybody anything significant.
It
And
wasn't Henry Ruggs.
it wasn't, it absolutely was not Henry Ruggs, and we are extremely lucky that it wasn't. And we'll just kind of see how it plays out from here.
Speaking of wide receivers, this is normally news that we would throw into what is happening, but since there's really not very much else going on at all, this literally got a 40-minute emergency podcast from a lot of the national sources when this came out here. So you know that there's nothing going on. Like we got to log on and we got to talk about this and only this. I'm talking, of course, about a trade that implicates two other AFC quote unquote contenders. Certainly feel strongly about one of those teams at this point. And that's the team acquiring Stephon Diggs, the Houston Texans. They did a pick swap this year, a second round pick next year. And they are also, correct me if I'm wrong, relieving him of his future contract obligations after this season. So it is
Wiping it.
essentially a 1-year deal for Stephon Diggs. They're giving up a 2025 second round pick and swapping picks this year. And for the Buffalo Bills, let's start there because they've obviously been They have been the team that the Chiefs have faced in the past. So we'll talk about the Texans too and that implication. But boy, pretty tough if you're a Bills fan to see this as anything other than sort of an admission that the window, at least temporarily, because Josh Allen's great and he'll
Right.
probably be great for a long time, and they can always retool as long as he's their quarterback. You know, they can find ways to sneak into the playoffs, whatever. But an admission that this window has closed.
Really, really interesting. First of all, decision to send Diggs to an AFC contender. I thought that was, you know, like if I was the Bills and I was worried about my playoff positioning, that's the last place I would want to send him. But it does kind of feel
Well,
like,
the second to
well, the
last
second to
place.
last, because they said you are allowed to seek a trade to 30 other teams in the NFL. The one team you are not allowed to seek a trade to is the Kansas City Chiefs. That was news broken by Chris Sims. Little bit of cleanup on your trade recap on that. The Bills sent a fifth and a sixth next
Okay.
year
Yeah,
and
gotcha.
Stephon Diggs for a second this year. So that was
Oh,
the, or
I
for a
mean,
second, sorry, for a second next year.
yeah.
All three picks were 2025 picks.
Okay.
But they sent Diggs and a fifth and a sixth for a second. So they really, you know, part of this was that the Bills also ate $30 million in dead money this
It's
year
crazy. Yeah.
on Diggs' contract. And as you said, the Texans wiped off his remaining years, which means that they, I would say, are banking on a contract year from Diggs, which is the best version of Diggs, the one that's trying to get money. Because if Diggs
Right.
isn't on a
Yeah.
contract year, who knows what goes through that guy's head and his motivations. And you know, the Texans have Nico Collins and they have Tank Dell. I mean, they've got some guys. Noah Brown even was flashed a
Sure.
lot last year. And
John
so
Mechie coming back,
yeah,
you know,
John
he was a high
Mechie,
pick a
I
couple
mean,
years
they've
ago.
got their wide receiver core is insane. And so there is a scenario where even though Diggs goes down there as like a huge move, that he's not really getting a ton of targets. Now he might be successful in his targets, but all that is to say the Texans might see that coming and be like, look, if this guy isn't happy with his targets, we're happy to have him for 1 year and then send him on his way.
Right.
So the trade, like you said, the Bills championship window, as it were, where they won zero championships, is closed. And they got rid of, you know, a bunch of people other than just Stephon Diggs, Tre'Davious White, Jordan Poyer, Mitch Morse, I mean Gabe Davis, they
Mike Hyde.
really they really got rid of a ton of guys this year. And so that's because they put themselves in cap hell by trying to keep pushing all their chips in the middle to go win a Super
Right.
Bowl and then never won the Super Bowl, and now the bill comes due. So,
Right.
you know, the Diggs deal, they signed him to a mega deal a couple of years ago and, you know, gave him a big signing bonus, which is prorated throughout the life of the contract. That's part of the big chunk of the $30 million that was dead when they traded him, because now all that money comes due. They just, I don't see how they, in an AFC East that has the Jets and Dolphins on the rise, I would say, I don't really see how they compete seriously for much more than, I mean, you know, I guess this year, hell, I was about to say, you know, much more than a wild card spot, but I mean, they were almost a wild card team this year,
Right,
even with all
sure.
those players.
And then they ended up being the two seed. So it
And
was a
then
fine
they,
line, but
exactly right. But like they were struggling this year with those guys. So
absolutely.
I just don't really know how I would be feeling if I was a Bills fan, but I'm happy that I am not a Bills fan.
You know, I think it's probably a smart move for them in the long run to Diggs obviously had a little bit of a down year last year, and there's a lot of reasons why that could be. You know, he's getting up there in age.
30, right?
He's, yep,
I think.
exactly. And he's getting up there in age, and he's definitely a little bit of a prima donna, like all, not all, but many, many, many great wide receivers. He's definitely got that to him. And we saw that, we've seen that publicly a number of times over the last couple of years with him and Josh Allen and other Bills players on the sideline. I think it's probably, you know, if the goal here for the Bills is to reset the cap situation that they got themselves into, and you know, take the lump for a year and then you know, kind of try and reboot in 2025. I think that's probably a good move. I think at this point, that's probably what I would do if I were the franchise. You know, admit that you don't want to keep, you know, pushing the money out. You don't want to be the Saints, you don't want to be
No,
going
no.
9-7 every year and then you know, paying somebody in 2030. because you had to restructure a contract to afford, another guy to get you maybe one more win and not contend. Like, what you want to do is you want to take the pain. You want to go into 2025 with a clean slate and cap room, and hopefully for them, a new head coach. I can't believe Sean McDermott is still at the
Boy,
helm
no
here,
joke.
but here they are. And then on the Texans side, man, I mean, obviously we have to see how this plays out, but I get Chiefs fans get grumpy about this, and I understand why they get grumpy about this, right? But like, there are legitimate reasons to not crown the Texans, but certainly to have a conversation about the Texans, right? Like, we're not saying that they're, the future AFC champions, right? They have to go through Kansas City. They have to prove it just like anybody else. But
Right.
boy, if I were a fan of any other AFC team other than the Chiefs, any other NFL team almost than the Chiefs, boy, I'd love to be a Texans fan. I mean,
Yeah,
like
right.
they got CJ Stroud and Will Anderson last year, and obviously almost had the coach of the year, and then
Tank Dell last year too.
they
I
get
mean,
into the second round of the playoffs and they play a tight half with the Ravens. They were tied in that game going into halftime, gave them a good game. They blew out the Browns in the first round of the playoffs, who were, I think, maybe even slight betting favorites in that game. So
yeah, they put up
it,
50 on them. I
and
mean,
you mentioned the weapons of the quarterback. I mean, a rookie contract quarterback who CJ Stroud was amazing last year. I mean, one of the best rookie quarterback seasons we've ever seen. And then to give him Stephon Diggs, I mean, like, this is how you're supposed to play it, right? Like, this is how you're supposed to approach a rookie contract quarterback in the NFL. And when you get a good one, like the Chiefs did with
Go all
Patrick
in.
Mahomes, the last rookie contract quarterback to win a Super Bowl, like you make it count. You do what you have to do to give him the weapons to succeed. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying the Texans are going to be, our top threat in the AFC, but I mean, right now, who are you putting above them? Maybe the Ravens, maybe the Bengals. Like, I
I
don't
think the
know.
Texans, I think gut feeling, they also added Joe Mixon to that
Sure.
roster, and I just feel that they have the most positive momentum. I don't know if that is going to translate into being the number two team behind the Chiefs, but I do know that if I were, yeah, I think if I were to bet on a team, I think it's them right now. I mean, we'll see how the draft goes. Some stuff can always shake out between now and opening day, but yeah, give me the Texans.
Turning back to the Chiefs here, we've got a couple of signings to recap here. Mike Dana returns on a 3-year deal. This is something that we sort of speculated about after the L'Jarius Sneed trade was likely to happen. A little bit surprising that he got the money and the years that he got, but it's nice to see Mike Dana back in Chiefs uniform.
Yeah, absolutely. This was a move that I think everyone was hoping for. To as far as just to reunite with a guy that was a free agent out there on the market that was a good fit. He's 26 years old. He got 3 years, 24, almost 25 million, 24.75 million, 15 million of that guaranteed. Good payday for a guy that has gotten better year over year. And I think that. The Chiefs' defensive line, if nothing, they are consistent. They are bringing
Yeah, right.
back all the dudes. I mean, they're just trying to, they're trying to run it back, not necessarily with what I would have considered to be the premier unit on that team, which I mean on the side, which is the cornerback room. But they, even though they legit let L'Jarius Sneed go, everybody else pretty much on that team is returning.
Right.
Obviously, no Willie Gay and Mike Edwards, but everybody else is coming back. And so yeah, that was a move that I think, Spags obviously has a huge say in that one. He might be the only one that's other than Veach, but good signing by the Chiefs.
Yeah, career high in sacks last year, 6.5, career high in quarterback hits with 13, career high in tackles with 50, his previous career high for combined tackles was 27. So a guy that really, like you said, has shown improvement. I mean, year over year, you love to see improvement in the NFL is not linear, but it's always kind of fun to see literal linear improvement in statistics. So 2.5 sacks as a rookie, 3 sacks his second year, 5 sacks his third year, 6.5 sacks his last year. I mean, just do the math. I mean, we're up to 8, 8.5 sacks next year. The year after that, second year of the contract, we're up to 10. And then
Man,
we're up to like a 12-ish sack
he
player in
plays till his late 30s,
2026.
he's going to set the all-time record.
Yes, he's going to be literally Michael Strahan in like his age 36 season. It's going to be incredible. It's nice to see him coming back. On the flip side, we have a running back being added to the room, returning to the running back room after a brief flirtation with J.K. Dobbins, formerly of the Ravens. Obviously, he has struggled with some injuries, hurt his knee in the first game of the year last year and was out for the year. He came in and did some kind of workout with the Chiefs, left without a contract. Rap Sheet reported that it's possible that reunion could still happen or that conversation could still happen later in the offseason, but it didn't happen last week. What happened instead is return of perennial whipping boy on this podcast, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He is back in a Chiefs uniform. And I gotta say, not only did I not see this coming, I don't, why? Like, why did we have to do this? I don't get it.
I don't know if I've ever been more up and down,
That's
and
fair.
mostly down, but like up and down on a player than Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because he comes in, he's a first round pick. We're really excited for him. He
Pat
has
wanted them.
what? Yeah, Pat absolutely wanted him. Of course, Pat's probably the main reason that he's a Chief. And then, you know, his production drops. Then, after everybody's ready to run him out of town, the Chiefs pick up Isaiah Pacheco, who hits the ground literally running. And, you know, Clyde kind of slides into this every now and then role. And while you and I lament every time they give him the ball on offense, it does feel like the vibes with Clyde are immaculate with the team, as far as his fit culturally, all the players around him. Everybody always speaks about him more than any other player, I think, on the team, with just this like love, just
Yeah.
absolute love for the person that he is, and for how he makes everybody around him have a better. I mean, that doesn't go unnoticed. That is something that, even if you're not extremely good at football, but if you can bring that to the clubhouse, you know, I think they see that a lot more often than we do. All we see is a 1 yard carry and a punt, and we get pissed off, which I get, of course. I still will. But like, I think that the dude is worth keeping around for that. And he did kind of have some flashes. He didn't really pop, but he certainly had a couple times where you could see things working out okay for him. Now, it's only a 1 year deal. It's no
Right.
money. It's really no commitment. And outside of Clyde, after Pacheco, the running back room was Michael P. Ryan and Denaire Prince on this team,
Sure.
and Keyonte
Right.
Ingram. I mean, nobody's. And now, I guess, Luis Riis-Zamet. We'll see how that works out. But so yeah, I would like J.K. Dobbins to come in and have Clyde be RB3, Dobbins RB2, and Pacheco RB1. I think that would be a really nice 1-2-3 situation. But you know, Dobbins is, like you said, a guy that he was injured in the beginning of the season 2 years in a row,
Right,
had
right.
season-ending injuries very early. So I mean, he really hasn't faced a lot of live bullets in a couple years. So I don't even know if I would be that happy about Dobbins. He does kind of have some intrigue and some pop, but
We still have the draft too, so there's still a possibility they could draft a player
yeah, go
and
find
bring
another
him in.
seventh
But
rounder that you know,
yeah,
that's really
right.
good. I mean, that's Veach for you. So yeah, you know, I don't know. Do you feel like Clyde is gonna get playing time this year? Like, do you think they're gonna use him?
I haven't seen the contract details, but I actually am not even 100% convinced that he'll make the roster.
I
But I
agree.
do think, like, I think that, let's be honest, I think this was his, even if he's getting the minimum, and even if he's getting, and I assume he's getting the minimum or something close to it, I don't know that we've seen the contract details yet, but I would assume, even if that's what he got from the Chiefs, that that was probably his best offer. And I think that it really depends on whether they want to go the J.K. Dobbins route, whether they want to draft the guy, whether they want to do both of those things. I think they're kind of keeping their options open. And I think the only reason we saw this happen as early as it did is that he really felt like he probably was not going to have any better options at all. And that's why he's back in Chiefs Red. I don't know if he makes the roster. If he does, I'll probably be a little bit frustrated by it because even LaMichael P. Ryan. And you know, I just got a little bit of a bias here because I've been rostering him in our dynasty league for the past year. Even LaMichael P. Ryan to me has shown more burst. I mean, it's not hard to do that when the competition is Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but we'll see how it all plays out. It's not the end of the world, and you know, like you said, he's a beloved player in the locker room. So if nothing else, you know, it keeps the guys happy. I'm for it for now. If he's getting significant carries down the stretch later this year, The listeners, the fans will hear about it.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey, Kansas, if you haven't downloaded the BetMGM app yet, you will definitely want to take advantage of this offer. New users who sign up through our link can get up to $1,500 in bonus bets paid back if their first bet does not win. This means if you place a $50 first bet and the bet loses, you will be credited with a $50 bonus bet to use on your next wager, up to $1,500. This offer is only available if you sign up through our link at bit.ly/sunnymgm. You can find the link in the episode description to start signing up. Again, the link is bit.ly/sunnymgm. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 or older and physically present in Kansas. Please gamble responsibly. If you or a loved one has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Check the episode description to see if you qualify.
Let's talk about the next great American dynasty. We've got Chiefs 35, Titans 24 in our second consecutive AFC Championship game at Arrowhead Stadium. Boy, this one is a blast, and it was a ton of fun to rewatch. But let's just let's hit the Chiefs system.
Let's dive right in. Of course, this is the system that the Chiefs use when they win games. It's an acronym for create drama, handle adversity, inspire hope, engage physically, finish strong, and separate entirely. You know, creating drama here, this is the, as you mentioned, AFC title game round two. They, of course, lost the previous year in Mahomes' first year starting to the Patriots in the AFC title game. Then they ran it back and they were there the very next season. Spoiler alert, that's going to happen a couple years in a row where the Chiefs just continue to get back to the AFC title game. It's pretty fun. They're still doing it. After last year's game ended in an overtime heartbreak, the Chiefs found their way again back to this game, this time going up against the league's leading rusher in Derrick Henry, who had over 1,500 yards in the regular season and who had an insane 377 yards in the two previous playoff games on the road at New England and at his new home, Baltimore. I was pretty nervous before this game, just kind of the whole hold the ball so that Mahomes can't get it. That idea was kind of still fresh in people's minds. That was kind of, they were trying to start coming up with some different things to do because Mahomes now had, you know, the MVP season. And then in 2019, here they were back in this game. And everyone was like, what are we going to do about this kid? He's really hard to beat. So we got to run the ball. We got to keep it out of the Chiefs' offensive hands. And, you know, that nobody was better set up to do that than the Titans. And the drama that the Chiefs created, not only to start this game, but it continued as the game got underway, as Tennessee jumped out to a 17-7 lead, mostly because the Chiefs defense didn't really have many answers for Tennessee. They scored two pretty easy long touchdown drives. Derrick Henry wasn't actually the bulk of that damage there. He was doing his thing, but like really the Chiefs just kind of weren't stopping Tannehill, weren't executing on third downs. They found themselves down double digits for their third straight playoff game. Of course, they were down double digits against the Patriots, brought that game back to overtime, down double digits against the Texans. We all know what happened in that one. Three games in a row, down double digits in this one. Quite some drama for the old Chiefies.
Yeah, I want to respond to a couple of points that you made there, starting with, you know, kind of the idea of this Titans team coming into Arrowhead for the AFC Championship game. So, number one, I mean, you're there for a second consecutive year. That's already like, this is the insane high point of our, this is the high point of our Chiefs fandom to this, yeah, to this point, right?
It's the high point of my life, to be honest with you. It was insane.
We were hosting the AFC Championship game after not ever having hosted it for the second year in a row. And, you know, I mean, it gets tough. Like the pressure really ratchets up when you get there once and you lose and you make it back, because if you lose again and you're 0-2, like that's, I mean, you know, it's like a Buffalo Bills situation.
Yes,
like
you make
it to the Super Bowl four times in a row and you lose four times in a row. Like that is legendarily bad. Mm-hmm. And you'll never erase that, right? Like there are certain aspects of a sports franchise history that can never be undone. And if you lose back-to-back AFC Championship games with, you know, Patrick Mahomes is your quarterback, and no matter how his career turns out, like that's hard to overcome. You need to win that game, and at least like it's important in these big games to stay at or above 500, right? Like you gotta win the first one, and if you don't win the first one, you sure as hell better win the second one.
That's right,
because otherwise you've got a big hill to climb out legacy wise. So then the Titans, I mean, this was not a good regular season team, and I really thought that they would get smoked by, if not the Patriots, then certainly by the Baltimore Ravens, who we have to acknowledge in 2019 were an absolute juggernaut. I mean, this is a 14-2 team, first in the NFL, first in scoring, third in points against. I mean, this was a team that Lamar Jackson, obviously a unanimous MVP in this season. They started off the year with that 59-10 drubbing of the Miami Dolphins, where they just absolutely destroyed them. They had a 49-13 win over the Bengals, 45-6 over the Rams this year, 42-21 over the Jets. I mean, they were absolutely demolishing teams left and right in this season. And, you know, the Titans really took it to them. Not only did they put up 28 points against the third best defense in the NFL that year, they also held this Lamar Jackson unanimous MVP offense to 12 points. And so the Chiefs, you know, as we know, had success against Lamar Jackson this same season and really have had great success against Lamar Jackson throughout his entire career. But seeing this Mike Vrabel coach defense, you know, come up big against an MVP caliber quarterback and shut him down, that had to give you a little bit of trepidation. And you mentioned, of course, Derrick Henry, it feels like we've entered an enlightened era of the NFL where most people know that running backs don't matter, but it's still pretty hard to cling to that belief when you're watching Derrick Henry go for 200 yards and he gets into the second level and nobody can catch him and nobody can tackle him because he's too big and he's too fast.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can hit him behind the line of scrimmage and you can keep him from getting up a full head of steam, great. You can handle him. If he gets going, you're toast.
I firmly believe that he's one of the most impressive football athletes I've ever seen. I mean, if you had 22 Derrick Henrys, I don't think you'd lose a game. He's a freak. He's just, like you said, so big, so fast. And yes, running backs as a whole don't really matter. But in any position, if you have one of the best that's ever done it, they're going to rise above and they're going to matter. And he certainly matters. And so the drama was created. Now you get to handle the adversity. And so the Chiefs got a 20-yard touchdown pass to Tyreek Hill, which was his second of the game, to cut the 17-7 lead down to 17-14. The defense then responds and gets the Titans to go the three and out for the first time in the game. So the Chiefs get the ball back down three with the waning moments of the first half. They were driving to driving down the field. I'm going to bump the ensuing play in this drive down to inspire hope. So with that in mind, knowing what happens at the end of this drive, how did you feel that with the Chiefs being down in this game, double digits, and then now getting the ball back down three, kind of, you know, getting a stop on defense, were you feeling pretty good before what happens?
I mean, I was feeling okay. I think this game after the Texans game, you know, all of this was building towards where we're at now, which is, you know, in our fifth year of the podcast, recapping Patrick Mahomes' 18 career playoff games and three Super Bowl wins. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice situation to be in. Extremely. But we didn't get there overnight. Rome wasn't built in a day. Nope. And there was a lot of trauma that we had to undo before we got to the point where we could just laugh at a 10-point deficit at any point in the game, including late fourth quarter, which we'll get into next week. And feel good about it. And so I was feeling, uneasy about this whole situation. And, I was watching this game. We had gone to the Texans game together. And then I was watching this game from the last steep in Crested Butte, Colorado, a little ski town up in the mountains. And Chiefs Bar, it's run by a couple of Chiefs fans. So there were other Chiefs fans there. It's not a very big community, and it's not at the ski resort. It's kind of down in town, so it wasn't packed. But I was in a little red room with, you know, some Chiefs memorabilia on the wall, and that was a good vibe. But it was a tough first half. It was a battle, and this next play certainly left me feeling extremely inspired. It really turned my frown upside down.
So of course, with 23 seconds left in the half, on 2nd and 10 from the Tennessee 27, Mahomes drops back, roles left. I almost just did the whole Jim Nantz play-by-play
Yes, out of
call.
this world.
Yeah, exactly. And scampers down the left sideline in what could easily be argued is the greatest play so far in Patrick Mahomes' career. It's certainly top two. I mean, or three. Like it was as just jaw-dropping as Mahomes as it gets, I will say that. It's 21-17 Chiefs at half after they were down 17-7. It's the cutting back inside. You know, the Chiefs had a timeout, so even though the clock was ticking down, you know, Mahomes knows everything. He knows exactly
He
what's
does.
at stake there. He knows what he can and
Perfect
can't get away
situational
with.
awareness.
Exactly. And he's down the sideline, and I mean, I've watched the replay so many times, and like you can see some guys give up on the play
You
because
can, of
every other
course.
time in NFL history, that quarterback is going out of bounds. And also because someone around him can get their hands on him and can push him out of
Sure.
bounds or bring him down or something. And he cuts back inside and spins at like the five. And as he's reaching forward, the ball gets completely stripped and it's in the air, and he still re-grabs it, falls forward, touchdown Kansas City, out of this world, gets up, does the flex. Everyone is just bananas. There are so many really good videos of like just on the sideline during that play, so you can just hear the roar rise as he's running. And there are some Chiefs moments that I kind of have to make myself remember, and then
Right.
there are some that, as I'm leaving this world as an old man, I still will have locked into my mind, even if I don't remember anything else. This is one of those plays. This was as good as it gets.
Yeah, it was. And you know, again, like I said, one of the fun things about this project is that we sort of build up to, you know, the monolith that we
The
have now,
moments.
the greatest player of all time. And you know, not just the deficits, which we just talked about, but we sort of teased it last week with the run against the Texans. You know, this was probably the play that sealed, you know, the back-breaking run as like a Mahomes hallmark play.
Yeah,
Like,
a
this was the
superpower. Yeah.
one, and we're gonna get to talk about it a dozen more times
Right?
in the course of this project, which is hilarious to think about. But like, and I'm literally like all of them are playing in my mind simultaneously right now. But this was the one that really cemented that as a Patrick Mahomes play. You know, the wherewithal to make the Titans believe that he's going out of bounds and then to finish the play like he did with contact, through contact. There's so much in this individual play that was a preview, a harbinger of things to come. And it's also just an impressive play in its own right. Like it's a play you can put up with so many iconic plays in the history of the NFL, and it holds up. I mean, it's not just like, oh wow, Mahomes had a big run. And you know, I mean, this wasn't a game-winning play. You know, it's not like the stupid Elway helicopter wasn't technically a game-winning play either.
No,
But I mean,
it
the point
wasn't.
is like
But it was in the Super Bowl, so
this
yeah,
is the
more
first
odds.
half of an AFC championship game,
Yeah.
and yet it is an iconic play that absolutely goes toe to toe with any highlight of the aforementioned John Elway's career, anybody's career. I mean, like
Right.
you could put this on the highlight reel of any quarterback, Hall of Fame, or you know, had a cup of coffee in the league or whatever, and it would be one of the 5 or 10 best plays of that person's career. It would certainly be, you know, had Tom Brady done this, it would have been the best play of Tom Brady's career. Point blank, it would have been.
Sure. Yeah. No, it would have been. And he didn't because he was incapable of doing something like this. I mean, literally. And the inspiration here, because it's in the Inspire Hope category.
Right.
I, again, very similar to the Texans game, where when the Chiefs were scoring, even when they were down, when I knew in my gut, in my heart, that this game was over and the Chiefs were winning this game. That one, this run right here, it was like, oh my God, the Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl. I know it was halftime and they were up four, but like, how can they do that and not finish this game? How can they not? So, of course, then I'm inspired and now we go to E, engage physically. And this is kind of a big picture moment here. I just want to talk about the defense against Derrick Henry. King Henry was averaging, as I mentioned, just short of 200 rushing yards in the previous two playoff games. And the Chiefs held him to a very nice 69 yards rushing in this game. And while the Chiefs pulled away at the end, the Titans spent the entire first half with a pretty significant lead. So this was tailor-made for exactly what everybody thought this game would be, which was the Titans, if they could jump out to a lead, then hand the ball off to Derrick Henry. He's going to punish you. He's going to destroy you, and he's going to go run for 200 yards, and you're not going to be able to. Patrick's going to get to touch the ball like three times, and you're never going to win. That was what the game script was set up to do, but the Chiefs defense had other things in mind. This was the first classic Spags playoff performance as a Chiefs coordinator, because the 2 previous years against the Colts and the Patriots, I mean, the 2 previous games last year against the Colts and the Patriots, they weren't defensive, performances. They were fine. And then
Yeah, Colts was pretty good. Patriots
Colts
was
was
not
pretty
good.
good, but the Colts also were struggling doing a bunch of other. I just didn't really see, like, oh, that's the
Sure.
Chiefs defense there. Like, that
Right,
was,
right.
and then, oh, and in fact, this is the first year of Spags.
Right,
So, of
correct.
course, the 2 previous years didn't even, those were Sutton. Those got Sutton fired. And then, the previous game against the Texans, obviously not a lot that happened in that game was due to Spags' defense. It was a lot of Chiefs shooting themselves in the foot, but they still gave up 31 points, and that's still not going to be something Spags, I'm sure, went to bed really happy about. But then this game, like, this is a matchup that whenever Spags has to, like, play chess with someone and not just go out there and punch him in the face, but, like, figure out how to beat somebody,
Right.
he does it. He has a plan. He has the right personnel in the right spots. And I mean, his game planning is second to none. There are so many times that we've sung his praises over these last couple years, and this was no different. This was an unbelievable engage physically moment for the Chiefs. And I mean, they stepped up in the best time they possibly could.
Yeah, I mean, huge performance by the defense. And you said it. I mean, like, it's not even really like people would always say about Belichick, like, he'll take your best player out of the game. It's not really even that simple with Spags. Like, he'll look at whatever it is that you're doing on offense, and he'll just completely shut the entire
Not
offense
let you
down.
do it.
It's not, even necessarily dependent on one player. It's not
Nope.
like, I'm going to take your best player out of the game. It's literally like, I'm going to just read the entire offensive strategy that you have, and I'm just going to completely counter it. This
Right.
was a Titans offense that had AJ Brown, 1,000-yard receiver as a rookie, and Derrick Henry, who certainly in this game and even to this day are like two of the most formidable physical
Physical.
presences
Yes.
at their respective positions that you
Correct.
have anywhere in the NFL and really in recent NFL history. You also had, the Titans with a really strong offensive line, and Ryan Tannehill with kind of his renaissance in Tennessee. And it was just, it's built off the back of, hey, look, we've got a good offensive line. We've got these two absolute freaks, and Corey Davis, former top 10 pick, who had a good year this year too, and another big, big physical fast receiver that, sort of an athletic freak. And that's the offense. And Spag said, all right, well, what if we just completely stonewall your run? We're able to get good penetration and hit Derrick Henry in the backfield. We're able to seal the edge. Frank Clark stepping up against the run, and we're able to completely shut down your running game. And now you can't go play action because we know when you're going to pass, and the entire offense is just going to sort of fall apart. And here we are. That's you get Derrick Henry finishing the game with 69 rushing yards. The Titans with under 300 yards of total offense in this game. And for a playoff game, an AFC championship game in good weather, I mean, that's a dominant defensive performance.
For a team that had been absolutely rolling, it's not like they had a significant injury
Right.
between the last couple games. Like, clearly this was a the Chiefs did this to them. And the Titans offense is kind of like our favorite type of board game, like an engine builder. Like,
Sure.
they run early, and maybe they're not ripping off big ones early, but they're definitely wearing you down. They're definitely setting up play action. They're definitely doing everything to where late in the game they should be able to now overwhelm you. And the Chiefs just didn't let them do it. The strategy of taking away your best player, it sounds good in theory, but you always then are committing resources to the best player. Usually it's two players. That's why you're taking them away, or that's how you're able
Sure.
to. And that allows a deeper team that maybe isn't solely reliant on their best player to then use their secondary pieces to take advantage of you doing that. So Spags kind of getting into the mindset and the gamesmanship here, and being able to take away a game plan instead of a player, just brilliant, and one of the many, many reasons that we love that guy so much, and we're glad that he's locked in here for a little bit. After engaging physically, you got to finish strong, and the Chiefs got a Damian Williams touchdown to increase their lead to 11 points, and then forced another Titans punt, and were facing 3rd and 6 from their own 40-yard line when Mahomes found Sammy Watkins streaking down the middle of the field after a defender fell down for one of the most electrifying moments in Kansas City sports history, as the Arrowhead crowd roared, "Sammy," when they saw him running down the field. 60-yard AFC winning touchdown put the Chiefs up 35-17 with 7:30 to go in the game, and the party was on. Emotionally, this is when I knew for sure. I mean, I had a pretty good sense before this, but this is when I was like, oh my God, they did it. And I've been, obviously this team is my lifeblood and everything, and I've followed everything they do with such investment and emotion. And even though the Super Bowls were a bigger deal in the future of this game, even though those moments meant more and everything, I remember the raw reaction and emotion from this moment, this Sammy Watkins touchdown, more than I think even like the Damian Williams streaking down the sideline. Like this was a moment where I knew my team was about to go to the Super Bowl and do something that they hadn't done in my entire life. And just going to the Super Bowl is such a huge deal and huge accomplishment. And they got as close as 1993 to the AFC title game, but that's the only time they had even, gotten close until Mahomes. So like I was thunderstruck after this moment.
I mean, I was, legitimately tearing up by the whole situation. It's worth pointing out that obviously, if you just look at a win probability graph, the Chiefs' odds of winning this game for this play were still
Real
quite
high.
good, but it was still only a one score game. I mean, if there had been a turnover or something like that, you could turn around and this game could have easily been tied, if the play goes the other way. And one of the things that I feel like is underrated about this, everything that you said about this play, I agree with. The emotional response to it, the emotional weight of this moment in franchise history. I mean, even to compare it to, the Royals, which obviously, the Royals winning the World Series was the high point of our lives as sport fans. I mean, going to the Super Bowl is almost a bigger accomplishment than winning the World Series
I
because
agree
the
with you.
Super Bowl is so much more culturally important
Significant.
than not only to America, but to the world than, anything else in sports. And, I know we as Americans, our international listeners will be rolling their eyes at this because of the World Cup and things like that. But like, the Super Bowl is the pinnacle of American sports, and participating in it is, even regardless of whether you win, is a dramatic, franchise altering accomplishment. And to know that the Chiefs were going was it was overwhelming. I wanted to say one other thing about this, which was that this was an unbelievable play. It was a hell of a throw
Yes, it was.
by Mahomes going
Yes, it
outside of the
was.
pocket, moving to his right, and then essentially throwing the ball back across the field, back to the left, like 50 yards in the air or something on the move. This was an outrageous play. And like it, the outrageousness of the play sometimes gets overlooked because number one, the camera angle, this broadcast angle, doesn't really do it justice. You really have to watch it from the end zone angle,
For
which I had
sure.
the pleasure of doing again this week. But also, like, the call, I mean, Nance's call is great. Sammy Watkins for the touchdown. The crowd reaction is great. All of that is amazing. The fact that it was essentially to win the game and send the team to the Super Bowl, like clinch the AFC championship for the Chiefs, all that sort of overshadows what an insanely good play it was in its own right. And I feel like we need to acknowledge that. It was so good.
And also, Tony Romo immediately jumps in about the flag. Like, as everyone's freaking out, he's like, "Oh, this could go either way." Because there was a flag on for defensive holding that, Sammy and a defender collided, and they correctly called it on the defender. But, Tony kind of ripped me out of it for a second, where he was like, "Hold on, this could be coming back," and I was like, "No!" And then, of course, it was fine. So, yeah, it was an incredible way to finish. And then, of course, after finishing, you have to separate. With 7 minutes to go, down 18, the Titans took 3 minutes off the clock. They did score a touchdown, a kind of a broken play over the middle of the field, but that was far too little too late. The Chiefs burned 2 minutes of their own. They punted it back, and then they shut down the Titans, who had a fourth down attempt that ended in a sack by Frank the Clark Shark, as Mitch famously called him. I guess that would have been in the Super Bowl, not in this game. But this whole time, this whole separate entirely moment of this game, I was partying. I was on top of the world. I was high-fiving and calling people and being just, I mean, for 7 minutes of game time, that was probably a half an hour of just like, of just absolute joy and elation that this team finally got over that hump that they hadn't gotten over since 1969. And I mean, as good as an S as we've recapped, the first time the Chiefs get back to the Super Bowl, that's as good as it gets.
Yeah, it was crazy because then, you know, the rest of the day I would just sort of, you know, burst out laughing or crying or whatever, you know, just like for the next couple of weeks after this game, but especially the day that it happened. And it was crazy. I really wish we did end up finally going to an AFC Championship game and getting to experience what it's like to win a game in your house, to go to the Super Bowl. And it'll be a blast to recap that too. I really wish I'd gone to this game. I really wish, this would have been such a special experience. And I'm sure we have many listeners who were at the game, and feel free to share that with us on Twitter or on the Discord. We'd love to hear from you. But yeah, I mean, it just was even just to see it on TV, everybody celebrating, the entire crowd getting into it. It was cool. It's you never forget the first time your team goes to the Super Bowl, and that last play to Sammy Watkins and then the sack and everything that sort of followed after that, the iconic Frank Clark interview, which we'll talk about when we get to the awards as well. You know, like those things are just going to be etched in our memories as fans forever. It was an incredible time. The best separated entirely in Chiefs history to this point.
Agreed completely.
Let's talk about the awards. And for those of you who are not familiar with our process here, they are Always Sunny in Philadelphia themed. So we have our five-star men. Who through their play shout out, "I'm a five-star man." We have our trash men.
"I'm the trash man. I come out, I throw trash all over the ring. And then I start eating garbage."
Who are eating garbage all over the field. And then we have our wild cards.
"Wild card, bitches! Yeah!"
Who are capable of anything. I did it last week, so why don't you kick it off this week with your five-star man?
Sure. It's the five-star man of our lives. It's Patrick Mahomes. He was 23 of 35, 294 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, no picks, and of course, 8 attempts for 53 yards and a touchdown, including the iconic 27-yard touchdown run. He did it all. He was amazing in this game. He could sense the Super Bowl, I'm sure. He knew that this was his time to kind of snatch it and go get it, and boy did he. It's funny with him because some of his five-star performances are like, obviously it's Patrick Mahomes, like he was the best player on the field. And some of them it's more of like an award about like just like the fact that the team is there is because of him. And then the third category is when it's both. And this is the category of, not only would I have given him the five-star man if he had a subpar game statistically, just because of what it meant for him to bring the team to the Super Bowl, but he coupled that with being just unbelievable on the field. And so that's, of course, why we're lucky enough to call him our franchise quarterback. Pat, no notes, buddy. 5 stars.
Yeah. I mean, again, one of the iconic performances of his career to this point. And I mean, let's be honest, still an iconic performance in his career.
Hell yeah.
Even now, you know, 5 years later, we're talking about it, and there's so many moments from this game that continue to stick out. That's not going to be the case for every game that we do in this project, which is crazy to say, because, you know, a playoff win for many teams is like their crowning achievement.
That's right.
In a generation, you know, like we won this playoff game, right? And it's like you win this many playoff games. Not every one of them is going to be iconic. This one definitely was. The performance was iconic. I'm going to give my five-star man to Sammy Watkins, whom we haven't really mentioned
talked
yet
about
during this project. This is a good opportunity for us to throw him out there, because obviously when you put that touchdown in there, and this accounted for a lot of his damage in this game, but 114 yards and a touchdown in this game. And, you know, Sammy Watkins was supposed to be the guy that put the Chiefs over the top. You know, Brett Veach went out and spent a ton of money on him on a three-year deal, you know, really that first offseason, and brought him in to support, you know, Mahomes as the, you know, as the new starter. And, you know, we're going to give him Tyreek Hill at that point wasn't, I mean, he was good, and he obviously was coming off of a Pro Bowl season with Alex Smith, and, you know, Alex Smith had led the league in passer rating, whatever. You had Travis Kelce.
Right.
But this was supposed to be the third piece that was really supposed to make things easy for your rookie contract quarterback. And we all know that Sammy's career as a Chief was very, very, very up and down. This was an up. And, you know, just like Damian Williams next week, and, you know, we've talked about Damian before, he obviously had a lot of big playoff moments with the Chiefs. But this is one of those games that, like, Sammy Watkins, that name will always be a part of Chiefs playoff lore. And, you know, it will always be a part of the story of the first championship, and for more reasons than just this game. But we'll go ahead and give him the five-star man. I'll turn to the trash man. This brings me no joy, because this was a player that, you know, was brought in to change the culture. But Tyrann Mathieu kind of struggled in this game. And we saw him throughout his Chiefs tenure struggle a little bit with physicality, and we see it in the Super Bowl too, which we'll get to next week against the Niners. You know, those bigger wide receivers, AJ Brown, Corey Davis, he allowed a 129.6 passer rating in this game in coverage. And, you know, somewhat surprisingly, he offered the Chiefs very little as a blitzer. He only had one blitz in this game, didn't miss any tackles. So, you know, he was sticking his nose in there. He was getting the tackles, but he was getting bullied a little bit in coverage. I kind of looked around. There were different players that I kind of considered for this one. Not a lot of options, which is obviously the reason the Chiefs came out of this game as AFC champions and heading to the Super Bowl. But Tyrann was my trash man for this one.
Yeah, that's fair. He struggled. I'll go with our method that sometimes in our playoff games, when you don't really pick a ton of trash men on the Chiefs side because they win a really big playoff game, I'm going to pick a Titan because screw them. And
sure,
I'm going to pick safety Logan Ryan. He allowed a perfect passer rating against. He was four catches on five targets to him for 112 yards, and two touchdowns. He's the one who fell down when Sammy Watkins streaked in for the touchdown. He lost Tyreek Hill on a deep one. He was not good. You know, the Titans were a lot of things that year in 2019. They were feisty and they were physical, but they just didn't have it in this game, especially on defense when they needed to against a caliber of offense like the Chiefs. So Logan Ryan, sorry, bud, you're my trash man.
I love that. We both picked safeties, except, you know, our safety merely, you know, he's fine. He allowed some passes and, you know, whatever. He didn't really offer anything. And Logan Ryan gave two touchdowns and his team lost the game. So that is classic. Why don't you give me your wild card and I'll close it out.
Wild card. Well, my wild card is going to be the cheetah, Tyreek Hill. There weren't maybe what I would call a lot of random or wild card like performances in this game. He had five catches for 67 yards, but two touchdowns. He had the first two touchdowns for the Chiefs. I was kind of just looking back like, man, he really was capable of anything. Like he had a prolific playoff career with the Chiefs. He was a matchup nightmare. Obviously burned the previously mentioned Logan Ryan on one of those. And just in general was a lot of fun. And maybe Sammy got the glory because of the long 60 yarder that normally would be Tyreek Hill on a 60 yard game winning touchdown, especially in this era of the Chiefs, that would have been Tyreek. But, you know, he was gracious enough to allow Sammy to go get a deep one. And for that, he gets my wild card this game.
Sometimes a wild card is about an up and down performance. Sometimes it is about a surprising performance that is sort of out of line with the player's career or season production. Sometimes a wild card is a mentality. And if there was anyone in this game who was capable of anything, it was Frank Clark, who delivered an iconic interview with the late, great James Palmer, who was recently let go by NFL Network in a stunning, unjustifiable decision.
Why he's late, not...
Yeah, right. He's not dead. He's alive. Yes. But just a career misfortune for him, which is disappointing because I've always thought that James Palmer has done great work.
He's fantastic. But he'll do good with whoever he sticks on with.
He will, and he'll land on his feet, but just a strange situation. But obviously, we remember Frank Clark's interview with James Palmer. Like, that to me is like, it's the
social media.
Yeah, it's the one from It's the run from Mahomes. It's the touchdown to Sammy Watkins. And then it's Frank speaking after the game.
Yeah.
And that is an indication. I mean, somebody who's capable of anything, talking about shutting their asses down on TV and literally just not caring at all about
Yes.
what's going out on national television. That's
Yes.
wild card mentality. But the
Yes.
play also, coincidentally, fits with the wild card. He had one sack in this game. It was on the last play of scrimmage from the Titans. Fourth and six from their own 35. They're down 11 points with a minute 28, and they're out of timeout. So, clearly the Chiefs were going to win this game. The Titans had almost no prayer unless they had gone down in a couple of plays, scored the touchdown, and then somehow recovered an onside kick. But Frank Clark gets the sack in this situation on fourth and six, gets the turnover on downs, and then immediately goes to deliver that iconic interview with James Ballmer. Talking about shutting King Henry down and, silencing all the skeptics. And that is true wild card behavior. He is 1,000% deserving of the award for this game.
Yeah, he was as I mean, and especially with ending the last two playoff games with the sack, and then of course what we'll see him do in the next game. I mean, he was on it. He was playoff Frank for this one. We do miss him. I know he's probably not capable of doing that these days anymore, but boy, what a run it was.
What a fun time it was. And what a fun time it has been to take this walk down memory lane with all of you, our listeners. We will be back on a regular schedule this week. So look for the podcast Thursday night, Friday morning, the usual times. And we will see you next time on It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.